You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to the podcast.
This is the podcast for October 26, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Donald Trump's Game Changer, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
We're so excited. We got a robocall today from Callista Gingrich.
Yes. The one that we actually answered.
Yeah.
From just the blind number, the blind
202 number. We thought, who could this be?
Assuming it's the DCCC.
And here's what happened. Driftglass walks out into the living room where I'm preparing podcast notes, and he's holding up the phone with speakerphone on.
Uh-huh.
And he says, guess who this is? And I
and
listened
said,
for just a second, and I just heard God and politics or something, God in America. And I said, is it Ann Romney? And you said, oh, no, better.
Oh, better.
And then
it's
I knew.
So much better. It's so much
and
better.
I knew just continuing to listen. Oh, my God, it's Callista. Oh, my gosh. And then, you know,
but Newt
she, was
and I,
selling, she was selling her video on
yes.
God in America. First of all, the timing of this is hilarious. This is a big F you to Romney that
yeah.
they're doing robocalls 12 days before the election.
Yeah.
In Illinois. I mean.
Yeah. Well, they don't need Newt anymore now that they have Mr. Murdoch to do their, carry their placenta water.
Yeah,
carry their, water for them.
Man. I mean, I don't even want to think about Callista Gingrich and birth control for the 6 years that she was shtipping him as a married man. I mean, I don't even want to think about the whole thing. The whole thing
and the
of
whole,
the Gingrich is having sex is just
I don't,
a bad
yeah.
idea.
That just, my subconscious just edits that right out.
Right.
I
would like a Callista Gingrich wig for Halloween.
Yes.
That would
yes.
be awesome. I have looked and looked. I haven't seen one yet.
Well, they don't make them anymore.
Well, you could just do this molded thing like Devo used to have. You know, the
yeah.
molded hair. It wouldn't even have to be an actual wig. You could just do like a plastic molding and wear it.
And go as, and then you have to have a bird mask for that sort of sharp predatory
sharp nose,
look.
Yeah, because she's had work done, but never on her nose. So that must be a family thing. Anyway.
And we'll stencil some dead doll eyes on the backs of your eyelids.
Oh.
So you can just close your eyes and,
and
stare
these light
all
light blue
night
long. Bird eyes come out. She's a piece of work, isn't she? I mean,
Newt
she's
and
a,
I want to talk about God and America. Because, you know, apparently, and I only listened to this phone call for about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Oh,
apparently,
it was long, too. Yeah.
God has not only been driven out of the public square
mm-hmm.
and out of public policy and out of politics and out of our decision making and out of our schools. It's all we're on the verge of the elite media and their liberal co-conspirators
yeah.
driving God out of your home.
Well, and this is the
that
point
close.
That I made before that I personally, as a blogger, struggled with the question of whether Callista Gingrich could be fair game. I mean, we have a whole podcast about this. That was
yes.
is she fair game?
Yes,
because
she
she's
is.
A wife. And even though they had an affair for 6 years, I didn't feel that that really meant she was fair game. What pushed her over the edge for me, what pushed her off of the bridge for me, was
uh-huh.
the videos that she made, and particularly anti-Islamic video, which
yeah.
is just so racist and so awful.
And
now she's got one on, you know, the founding fathers were you know, God-loving Baptists, and it's
yeah.
the evil ACLU that's keeping God from your home, and yeah, that
yes.
that crap. So.
Well,
and she called the founder of one of the founders of the Blog Against Theocracy Blog
yeah.
Swarm to sell this video. So that was hilarious.
Way to go, Callie. Yeah. And this was followed an hour later, almost to the minute, by a robocall from the DCCC.
Which we didn't pick up. But
so,
at least they have the cojones to put DCCC on their
yeah.
call. Like, you know, caller ID says we're those douchebags. So we didn't pick up.
Yeah. But, I mean, imagine the infrastructure. And this is
yeah.
we talk a lot about the media and what the media really means. And you know, 80% of the media is propaganda for products or people or policies
mm-hmm.
or whatever with just staggering amounts of money behind it. And we're going to talk about the death of the Netroots, the much, you know, every twice a year somebody pronounces the final rights over the body of blogging. And
yeah, the earliest one I saw was 2006. So
yeah.
I went back to my blog to find. But that's been going on for years and years.
But imagine the infrastructure necessary for Callista Gingrich to not only make a very professionally constructed video, but mass market it all the way to the point where she, for some reason, has your number.
Yeah.
And pushed it all the way through. And that's how Newt Gingrich is a millionaire.
Yeah.
It's just that simple.
Or at least rides the roller coaster from being a millionaire to being completely broke, just like Donald Trump does. I mean, there's
I kind of think Newt doesn't play with his own money anymore.
Oh, no. No, absolutely not.
I kind of think Newt is because he was, you know, he runs companies into the ground. He runs his little front organizations, but he always has another one behind it.
Yeah.
And if you go back to IRS filings, for example, I had a little fun with an IRS site where 501c3 organizations and 525 and all the not-for-profit organizations have to file with the IRS. And Gingrich has been funded out the ass by Sheldon Adelson for years.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, it goes way before his campaign. And right beneath that were casino moguls and NASCAR race owners and basically entertainment industry goons who like the message he's selling. And Rachel Maddow used to have almost a weekly feature on the fact that Newt Gingrich is a direct mail hustler.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to use the word mail and hustler in the same sentence with Newt Gingrich. I mean, that's a little frightening. But he is a con artist and frankly, and upfront about it, he doesn't say it, but he is an absolute shill. He's an absolute fraud, which is why putting him on Sunday morning programs on a regular basis, every time he runs through his Rolodex, runs out of ready cash and needs another refurbishing of his career, David Gregory is there to put his hands on his head and bless him by putting him on Meet the Press and making him re-legitimizing him. And that cycle there, that's the media. That's not an incidental side effect of your political media. That is the media. And those are the people who shape conversations, who make sure certain topics never, ever, ever get onto the table. And that's the arena in which presidential candidates have to play. So when one of those creatures calls us in the middle of the day with a message that for a mere $29.95, we can buy her horrifying video.
Yeah.
And there are suckers. There are a million suckers out there who are perfectly willing to plunk down that kind of money to have their bigotry and idiocy confirmed by the Speaker of the Houses.
And you look at the list of front runners and how the list of front runners in the Republican Party went month to month over the past year and a half. And there really was just this scrambling for anyone but Mitt for months. And he bought them out and bought them out and bought them out. And and now they're stuck with him. And this goes into the last debate, which we haven't had a chance to talk about, where all of a sudden, Mitt Romney is agreeing with President Obama over and over and over again.
On everything.
On everything. And I want to mention two things. One is, you know, Glenn Beck gave up on voting.
Yeah.
Look, there's no difference between them. I'm just not going to vote. And I said, you know, if you really want a candidate who disagrees with Barack Obama, maybe you should vote for Jill Stein at the Green Party. You know, I'd like to see him team up with her. But the idea that Mark Halperin gave both candidates a B+, rather than, because he looked at the polls and he was horrified. He couldn't report that the polls said Obama had won 80-20, you know, just ridiculous. He couldn't, if it's not 50-50, he can't talk about it. But he can grade them then and give both candidates a B+.
You know, first of all, both Mitt Romney's Benghazi debacle, which is a really hard thing to say, and his entire debate performance fell into that Halperin umbrella of, well, you know, both sides can interpret it either way.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, I sent you a video. I there's a little post up on my site of Mark Halperin ahead in need of a pike. He is just the most useless sack of skin out there. He is so clearly a bought and paid for toady, ass-licking shill. There's absolutely no way to get him off the air.
Right.
And there's absolutely no way to get to him. There's absolutely nobody in his circle ever who's ever going to lean over to him on air with a live microphone and just say, Jesus Christ, man, do you have a conscience? I mean, how much did you sell out for? Because you are barely functional as a moral being. And yet, every fucking day on my liberal media, there he is with his bland robot face, shilling for the conservatives and pulling this centrist shit out of his ass.
I wanted to point out to you, too, I don't know if you caught this today, that Condoleezza Rice was on Greta Van Susteren last night.
I must have missed that.
And she has refused to criticize Barack Obama for Benghazi. Much to Greta's consternation, you know. She said that she echoes, this is the LA Times says, that Condi Rice echoed Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton's comment that the fog of war made it hard to grasp what happened. Quote, we don't have all the pieces, and I think it's easy to try to jump to conclusions about what might have happened there. It's probably better to let the relevant bodies do their work.
Uh-huh.
And then she also said, you simply can't keep your diplomats in a bunker. They have to get out and do their work, and the world is a dangerous place. So she just wouldn't go there. And, of course, the right-wing blogs are now calling her a liberal. So
is she worse than Colin Powell, do you suppose?
I think Colin Powell was heavily influenced by the Salt Lake City Tribune.
Yeah. Oh, well. As goes the Salt Lake City Tribune, so goes Colin Powell.
There you go.
Well-known political formulation.
It's getting bad out there, people. You wanted to help everyone take a drink.
I did.
About this I agree debate. The idea that now Mitt Romney is just sort of agreeing over and over again with Barack Obama on foreign policy.
Well, not simply agreeing with him, and it has been covered by probably every media you've already heard, but not just agreeing with him, but just once again completely reversing what he has said 2 days before, 3 days before, on really big, important life and death issues that if you're actually a functional human being and not a fucking Cylon, you would have come to some conclusion about. And then if your conclusions are wrong and you're a human being and not David Brooks, you would have had a long period of agonizing reappraisal, at which point you say, you know what? I got that thing wrong. I really, really believe that, but now I don't really believe it anymore. In Mitt Romney's case, it is simply going down his punch list to see what will work today. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, this is what I will say today about Afghanistan. Okay, that audience has now been dispensed with. Oh, here's what I will need to say tomorrow, which is 180 degrees opposed to what he said. And there was a wonderful short story, 1954, by Tom Godwin. Everybody take a drink, called The Cold Equations. And The Cold Equations was about, I think, a teenage girl smuggling her way to Mars, I think. I didn't look it up, but it was a planet where there was a plague or a disease or something. And she stowed away on board this little spaceship. Unfortunately, the spaceship was carrying antiviral inoculations, I believe, the thing that would stop the plague. And they were stripped down to nothing. And the basic laws of ballistics are, you know, it takes a certain amount of energy to get you started on such a trip. Sometime in the middle of the trip, you flip over at the midpoint and then you break and you come to a stop. And with her additional weight, they'd lost fuel on takeoff. And with her additional weight, they would not be able to stop it. They'd either go shooting past the planet or they'd crash and die. And they went through it over and over and over again and came to the conclusion that there is no way that they can land safely with her on board. And there's no spaceship. There's no spacesuit. So they put her in the airlock and they let her have one last conversation with her boyfriend. She's doing this to visit her boyfriend. And out she goes into space and she dies. And it's that cold, harsh reality of orbital mechanics. There are certain rules you can't break. And it reminded me an awful lot of Mitt Romney in the sense that he is perfectly willing to put anyone and anything in the airlock and blow it into space the minute he's done using it. And when it stops being useful to him, out it goes. And the only thing he wants to do is occupy the White House. He doesn't want to go through the hard process of debating an issue. So he'll just figure out what you want to hear and he'll say it. And it is astonishing that the cold, unless you understand how vulture capitalist CEOs work, it is astonishing to watch someone take a principle that they swore they believed in on Tuesday and completely jettison it on Wednesday. But when you factor in the fact that the base doesn't care anymore, they just want that black guy the fuck out of their White House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You realize Mitt Romney is in a certain sense, you know, the whole thing about Nixon, you go right during the primaries and you cut back to the center. That's really obsolete. The new formulation, as far as I can see, is you just drive the base. You just mash your foot down as hard as you can on the accelerator and go as hard and fast as you can to the very last minute. And then you bail out.
I want to disagree with you a little bit on this, Jeff Glass.
Okay.
Not that what you have said about Mitt Romney isn't true, but I think what you've said is true about the entire Beltway and the entire media of the Beltway and the people that occupy that world. And do you remember back in around like 2006 or 7, there was for a brief moment a brief discussion of whether we would have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission about the torture?
I do. I'm one of the four people who remembers that.
And it went nowhere.
Yeah.
And it went nowhere really, really fast. And it was like an Agatha Christie novel where you realize there are so many people who are guilty and who knew about the torture ahead of time that there was no way that Sally Quinn's cocktail parties were going to get fucked up by this at all.
So I believe a
bury it.
Speaker of House or future speaker named Nancy Pelosi took impeachment off the table.
Yeah, she took impeachment off the table.
And what she did, took any weapon we had to pry out of these people's grubby little hands the real truth.
Well, because who was responsible and who knew and which Congress people knew and who was she protecting? And just to keep a little bit of perspective, I know I read this to you earlier today, but for benefit of our listeners, I'd like to read a passage that is from a mainstream media source. I've edited it a little bit, but I'd like to read it to you and see what you think.
Yes.
Mitt Romney does look like a weak candidate, not so much because of his religion, his laid-back schedule, or his conservatism, but because of his eagerness to fudge his stands on anything and everything to appeal to any and all potential voters. Where once he inspired passions pro and con, now he often induces apathy. His most excited constituency seems to be the left-wing pundits who still hope to make a killing with books excoriating him.
Yes.
Okay. Now you can agree with that, disagree with it, but it's a pretty straightforward mainstream critique of Mitt Romney's campaign. And it reads logically, right?
Except
that is Frank Rich on May 28th, 2006, writing about Hillary Clinton. Mrs. Clinton does look like a weak candidate, not so much because of her marriage, her gender, or her liberalism, but because of her eagerness to fudge her stands on anything and everything to appeal to any and all potential voters. Where once she inspired passions pro and con, she now often induces apathy. Her most excited constituency seems to be right-wing pundits who still hope to make a killing with books excoriating her. Now, that's Frank Rich. Okay.
Right.
And the reason I bring that up is, you know, a number of liberal bloggers pointed out that the winner of this debate, this last debate, was the Bush Doctrine. That we are now debating foreign policy based on whether we will be involved militarily. And it's fascinating to me to watch that and watch them agree on Syria and have big, huge problems with Iran, because Syria is not exporting oil to Europe. And Iran is. And that's what's going on there. Yeah. And so I don't know. I want to ask Colin Powell, what is it you're really endorsing? And I know I'm being critical of the president here.
Yeah.
But are we endorsing stability for the military-industrial complex, or are we endorsing something more than that?
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem to me that the whole inside the Beltway mentality is, let's keep our cushy jobs, let's make sure our friends in the Virginia military contractor world are happy.
Don't go to jail.
Don't go to jail and don't lose any funding.
Right.
This crap about, you know, making a very big deal about the Navy and boat building, and it turns out one of Mitt Romney's funders is a boat builder.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't have any more work. We don't have any more battleships. We haven't had any battleships since 2006. It's not about defense. It's about money. And I just wonder if, I hate to sound so cynical at this point in the election process, but this debate to me made me very cynical.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And what you said today about the airlock thing, you know, that just put them in the airlock. Just whatever the truth is, the truth can just go in the airlock because it doesn't really fit on our ship. Our ship is about making money for GE, for Northrop Grumman, for the networks. And I keep thinking about Rupert Murdoch holding a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign.
Yep.
And she went and got that check. And Mitt Romney went and spoke at the Clinton Initiative conference.
Yeah.
And they shook hands and laughed and smiled. And it wasn't, you know, because you're not going to burn that bridge. That's big money there that could help Haiti. You know, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it that you're not going to burn that bridge. But don't then tell me that it's about change in Washington, Hillary Clinton, when you go run for president. Because it ain't.
Yeah. And I agree with you about our elite ruling class. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you about our elite media. I disagree about the nature of the movements that are pushing from either side. Hmm. It is simply not the case that if you told a bunch of cantankerous, cranky, Barack Obama sold us all out liberals, whom I love, that, you know what? Barack Obama was never for single payer.
Right, right.
Bill Clinton was never impeached. Monica Lewinsky never existed. Yeah. Right. And if you just simply went down the list of things that were uncomfortable or inconvenient or out of step with their beliefs or just would make things difficult in a debate. Bill Clinton never had an affair. Bill Clinton, you know, Monica Lewinsky never existed. The rank and file of liberals and progressives would never go along with that. Now, we'd be ignored. Absolutely. You know, we are ignored. The entire media complex is based on ignoring liberals.
Yeah.
Pretending our issues don't exist until those issues climb up their legs, bite them in the throat. For about 5 minutes, they have Marcos Melitzis on television who says, I told you so. And then he disappears. Yeah. And we're right back to having Ann Coulter and Newt Gingrich talking about centrism. So it is the money men behind the media who will not let us on the playing field. And we keep pushing. However, when you talk to a conservative, someone pushing from the other side, and you say, you know that thing you believed about Barack Obama living in Kenya, that never happened. You know that thing about abortion that Todd Akin said? Their answer is, he never said that. Yeah, but I have it here on tape. No, that's not true. That's not true. That never happened. They are qualitatively different as a political force coming from the right because they are no longer functionally in a political sense, human beings.
Their human senses are not being relied upon to back their policy. Absolutely
reprogrammable robots. And they are reprogrammed at this point every 48 hours to believe a completely new set of facts. The only thing that remains constant, their firmware is liberals are always wrong. That's the only thing they consistently believe. But they have disavowed everything they believe. They pretended George Bush never existed. They put on funny hats and started a whole movement to pretend George Bush never existed.
Yep.
And that is the base that Mitt Romney has to deal with. And once he wins the primaries, he can just tell them anything he wants. He can change his mind every 5 minutes. And they will go right along with it and nod their head and say, damn right, that's exactly right. How come those liberals keep doing X, Y, and Z? And as powerless and as angry and as frustrated as the liberal progressive base of the Democratic Party is, we don't forget. And we don't pretend things never happen.
Right.
We get angry about it. We fight about it. We fight about the relative importance of drones versus having a healthcare system that works. Because apparently those are the choices we have left.
Yeah.
We fight over whether or not it's worth not overturning Roe versus Wade, by voting for Barack Obama to make sure that certain Supreme Court justices are never appointed to the court. We fight about those things because it's a series of very unpleasant trade-offs for us, and we don't pretend otherwise. We also don't pretend we can get where we want to go by sitting on our thumbs and doing nothing and saying, well, you know, both sides just suck.
Yeah, right.
Because you know what? Last time we did that, okay, 8 years of George Bush.
Yep.
So that's just the ugly, grown-up political compromise.
And the time we did that before, we got 8 years of Ronald Reagan. Let's not forget. Yeah. I mean, we have learned our lesson twice on this. So, yeah.
So I would agree wholeheartedly that what is broken about our system are the people at the top controlling the bottlenecks, controlling the media, controlling our politics, controlling the money. If we could find a way to haul those people out into the public and start erecting gallows around this country for some quick and speedy justice, I'd be all for it within the limits of the law, of course. But put them under threat. Make them feel uncomfortable. Until David Gregory starts feeling really uncomfortable by facilitating lying on his show, he's just going to keep doing it. And the minute he starts feeling his wallet pinch every time Ann Coulter is on his program, or every time Newt Gingrich is on his show, the minute people start showing up at his house in large numbers, screaming at the top of their lungs, protesting him, surrounding his house and demanding to know why the fuck he keeps doing this, guess what? That'll become a story. And then we'll be able to spend another 2 minutes in the public spotlight making our case. But until that happens, nothing's going
to
change.
I'm not looking to be hosting Meet the Press anytime in this lifetime.
No.
It's not even our goal to be a guest on Chris Hayes' show. I'm telling you, we are not going there.
No, but there was a brief and shining moment once the Iraq War fell apart, as we warned you it would, where there was some grudging admission that on the subject of this terribly bad idea, there were certain people who were right and there were certain people who were wrong, and that the people who were wrong really fucked up badly. And they fucked up badly in that they refused to let the other side out of the box. They refused to listen to what other people were telling them. And John Heilman is the only one who still says things like this.
Yeah.
And he says it once in a blue moon, but he does say, you know, the liberals who are grouchy and pissed off about Iraq kind of have a reason to be. You know, they kind of have a point.
Because and they kind of were saying it right at the time that these decisions were being made. Yes,
and
yes.
We told them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
And it turns out all those well-paid, well-coiffed, owned political tools were wrong. And you know what they got for being wrong, horribly wrong, awfully wrong, bloodily wrong about that and the Bush tax cut and all the rest? They all got promoted.
We got a letter. We get lots of letters, and we're so grateful to you guys for writing us. You can write us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We got a letter and a contribution from one of our listeners named Stephen, and he had some things to say specifically to you, Driftglass, so I wanted to share this, and perhaps we can respond to him.
Let me take a good stiff drink first. I can't take criticism. That's why I'm a blogger. I just can't stand people thinking I'm wrong and telling me so.
That's why you turned off all your comment threads forever, right? No, wait, you didn't do that. Okay. You publish every single comment.
I have exceptions. I will not publish
don't publish spam.
I don't publish spam, threats of harm, or crazy trilateral commission, the Jews are running the world conspiracy crap from anybody.
Okay.
I don't publish any of that stuff. But pretty much, call me an asshole to my face. I published today. Somebody found my John Galt quote and did like two paragraphs on how liberals and conservatives are both so extreme in their views. And John Galt, you know, Atlas Shrugged is not science fiction by a long stretch, blue gal. And,
okay.
You know, I doubt anybody will ever see that, but the person who wrote it probably will.
Yeah.
And they said
he should know that you published it and you weren't afraid to publish it. Yeah.
And by the way, dude, don't ever, ever take me on science fiction. Ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't be approaching Driftglass with it.
The quick and dirty rule about science fiction is if you take the science away and the story falls apart, it's science fiction.
Mm.
If you take the magic engine out of Atlas Shrugged and the death ray and the force field out of Atlas Shrugged, there is no story. It all falls apart. Ergo, it is science fiction. QED.
Got
suck it.
That's why I'm always asking you about movies. Is this science fiction? And you will tell me, no, that's not. Even though there's a spaceship in it.
Well, some people will disagree with me, and those people are wrong. So.
All right. Well, let's read Stephen's letter, because I think he's a very friendly listener. He contributed to the podcast. We certainly appreciate that.
And he makes a valid point. He makes a good point.
He makes a point that is certainly worth considering.
Yeah.
And here is the letter from Stephen. Thanks for your podcast. I have enjoyed listening to your banter and thoughts on the political scene. Donating has been on the to-do list for several years. Well, that's interesting because the podcast has only been up for two, but yeah. we don't begrudge you that, Stephen. Consider this a makeup donation. Well, we're very grateful to you. Thank you, Stephen. Though I don't always agree with some of the discussion, I think Driftglass too easily paints with a broad, dismissive brush. I would like to hear about Republicans, conservatives, bloggers in the modern media that the team does respect, and some actual interaction with them would be great.
Uh-huh.
I do enjoy listening to your point of view. I hope that this new year brings joy and peace in your household. Stephen. Stephen, thank you for your letter. And yeah. I want you to know, Driftglass, that I wrote back to Stephen and pointed him, not to sort of deflect this question, but I did point him over to our friends at Liberal Oasis and the fact that Bill Scherer, who is the co-host of Liberal Oasis, does a show called Blogging Heads with Matt K. Lewis, who is a conservative. And he does sort of a Blogging Heads discussion back and forth with Matt, which is sort of the old, you know, point counterpoint kind of thing. And he also shocked me this week on his podcast on Liberal Oasis. His co-host is Tracy, and Tracy and I are going to do a girls-only podcast, Girls Gone Wild podcast together in the next couple of weeks. Before the election, we have promised each other.
Ladies' night, yeah.
We're going to do something to sort of cover team rape, as Stephen Colbert called it.
And I'm going to do the background waka-ja-waka vocals, so...
I want you to do the
ladies
in a world where
in a world. Ladies, I'm here with your pizza.
Yeah.
Why, yes, I am the cable delivery guy. Perhaps you could let me in and have me.
We don't have any money. Oh, no.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
typical liberals. No
there.
Fucking money. If you want my services. Anyway, I apologize.
No, we're those people.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point is that he shocked me this week. Tracy Olson does this feature at their podcast called The Stabby Five, which many of our listeners are familiar with. It's the five people that week in order, lowest to highest, that make Tracy want to stab in the eye with a pencil or whatever. And instead of doing that, she puts them on a list and gets emotional about how awful they are. And it's been very, very easy for her to come up with Stabby Fives.
Yeah.
But one of the people in this week's Stabby Five was Michelle Malkin. And Michelle Malkin, I'm not going to give away their whole podcast. You can go over and listen to Liberal Oasis and find out why this particular week Michelle Malkin was on the Stabby Five list. But Bill Scherer pointed out that he went to college with Michelle Malkin and that she was his editor at some school publication. Uh-huh. And that he is on speaking terms with her.
Yeah. Okay.
And that really surprised me. And it got you and I into a discussion of, you know, I have family and associates at church that I know for a fact are Republicans or are conservatives.
See, Stephen, this is going.
And we
it took a while, but we're going there.
Don't discuss politics at all, ever. Uh-huh. We just don't discuss it because I care about these people in another venue, you know, other than politics. They're either family or we work together on church issues. And on those issues, they are very, very good to me and working for causes that I believe in. So we don't discuss politics. And I'm sure our listeners have people that they just, in their lives, that you just don't discuss politics with them. Bill Scherer did not say whether he discusses politics with Michelle Malkin while they are on these speaking terms. I have no way of knowing that. But it occurred to me that this you would like to hear about Republicans, conservatives, and conservative bloggers in the modern media that we respect. I mean, what do you think, Driftglass?
Well, let me approach this from several different directions at once.
Okay.
The first direction is Stephen, if we don't solve this real ugly animus between us, I don't mean you and me, I mean left and right. If we don't solve this problem, we're going to rip the country apart. Possibly violently, but certainly damage ourselves. We've already done a lot of damage. It is my contention that it is painfully obvious that the rancor and the bile and the just unfiltered hatred as a part of their natural vocabulary going back 30 or 40 years is simply part of the conservative Republican DNA at this point. I don't think I would happily dip that with anyone who is accessible to reason and evidence. But I think it's simply verifiably true that, you know, from the holding America hostage to during the debt crisis by the Tea Party, which are, remember, there is no Tea Party. There's Republicans in funny hats, all the way back to Newt Gingrich's Go Pack efforts in the 90s to turn hate speech into the natural vocabulary of every elected Republican official in Congress, all the way back to Nixon and Lee Atwater and Ronald Reagan. It simply is not disputable that Republicans are bred to hate liberals, imaginary liberals mostly, because they don't know what the fuck we think or believe or feel. But they just come out of the box loathing us. And it doesn't matter how many times you disprove what they say or debunk their silly ideas or point out that they have done far, far, far worse. They just don't give that shit up. And if we don't find a way to fix that, we're screwed. So I absolutely agree with the premise that there must be a way to find a bridge there, except they keep burning it. Every time we reach out a hand, they impeach one of our guys. So it's pretty pathetic, and the napalm is all coming from one side. Secondly, I have relatives and friends and colleagues and so forth who are very conservative, very Republican. And like Blue Gal, we either find a way to avoid the subject completely, or I push back. I push back with a smile, but I don't let them. And you know what I find every time I push back, Stephen? Every single time, every time. Liberals, well, you know, okay, maybe you just debunked, you know, my 1,000th bullshit theory that I just got from Rush Limbaugh, but you know, liberals are just as bad. Every time, Stephen, every time, they're programmed to never take responsibility for the bullshit they believe. And this runs all the way from the very reasonable moderate Republicans with whom you'd think we would have common ground to the bottom-feeding Rush Limbaugh types. And I'll get back to that in just a second. The third thing I find a way to do is, and Blue Gal has spoken to this subject many times, is find sidewalk issues locally.
Right.
I worked with very conservative people before in several jobs that I've held. And the way I found to work with them is find a matter of immediate mutual interest to us both that they can't disagree, that hits them right in the pocketbook. Mm-hmm. This is your company going under. You know, this is your bottom line. This is your job at stake. And leave politics at the door and just agree that there are certain practical things you have to do to make X, Y, or Z happen. And can we agree to do those things that we can agree on? And build a base of mutual respect over, you know, the getting shit done part of the job. And that works to a certain degree. But the truth of the matter is, Stephen, from the most moderate, reasonable conservatives and Republicans in the media to the most rancorous, bile-spewing, reactionary conservatives, they all have one thing in common. They all lie constantly.
You know, I know you've had conservative coworkers and clients and people that you worked with who have said to you, you know, you're the only liberal who ever made any sense to me or ever gave a damn about what I was doing, or,
yeah,
you know, and you can win people over that way and you have said, I've heard you say in several social situations, you know, I know I'm a dirty liberal, you know, and
yeah.
I still believe that businesses should grow because that's good for my people. You know, that's
exactly.
That's a good thing. So,
and so on the ground, that's a real asset. Mm-hmm. That's a real thing you can do. If you're safe, you know, if you're not, if you're in a community where liberals are hunted for sport.
Well, and I did a little glance at our contributors, and I have to say there's a real heavy weight of our contributors, people who support this podcast, who are from red states. So you're welcome. We're glad you're with us, and we know what it's like. I lived in Alabama for over a decade. I know what it's like to feel like you're surrounded and in a little tiny island where you don't feel safe to talk.
Welcome to Radio Free Liberal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in a way. I mean, I really do have a lot of sympathy for the emotional turmoil that
absolutely.
That causes to feel like you're the only one in your entire community who cares about poor people. I mean, that's just, and actually when I drove to, I go to a YMCA that's out on the west side of Springfield where there has been white flight. And there are these brand new houses with no sidewalks and golf courses. And there are Romney signs everywhere. And I just felt like saying, dude, you got the white flight thing. You know, you don't need to amplify it with a Ryan Romney sign on your front lawn. Dudes, you know. But apparently they see the need to, you know, it's my taxes. So
they need to throw gang sign.
Yeah, rich, really. Really, that's what it is. So.
But Stephen specifically, this is the part that where we have to, I think I have to branch off a little bit, because Stephen specifically said, Republicans, conservative bloggers, in the modern media, not our friends, not our family, not our coworkers, people who have some sort of commanding presence, small or large, on the media stage, people who control the debate, who participate on the national or regional level, and so forth. And there are Republican conservatives who I agree with a great deal. One of them is John Cole at Balloon Juice.
Yeah.
Who said basically liberals are right. I was fucking wrong and walked away. Guy who blogged under the handle American Dad was a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote an open letter to his fellow conservatives saying, here are the 25 reasons why you cannot continue to bullshit yourself. You can't be in a party that you can't believe X and believe in a party that does Y. You just can't do it. Look, I want my conservative brethren back. I want to come home. And he was just shredded by his fellow conservatives. The guy who runs Little Green Footballs.
Yes. He too found a way to break out of that and say, you know what? My party, this party I've been a part of has lost its mind. And I'm no longer a part of that. And I'm not going to defend conservatism. It's not like Andrew Sullivan. I'm not going to pretend there was a golden age when I was right all the time. I was wrong.
And that's a real key issue. Yep. Because the people who are left behind, who you would normally consider, who the media blesses as being moderate, thoughtful, introspective conservatives, are just as big a liars as the people who live in Rush Limbaugh's shadow, who try to emulate him, who are the Michelle Malkins, the Ann Coulters. They just tell a different lie, but they tell a gigantic lie. And Jonathan Chait wrote this wonderful essay that I'm going to integrate into one of my own, in the New Republic, called The Revolution Eats Its Own. Mm. And it's a very thoroughgoing analysis of exactly this particular bandwidth of conservatism, the moderate conservative, the guy who is not the crazy bomb throwing conservative. And he said, look, basically there's David Frum and Bruce Bartlett who broke with their party. And I would even have an issue with David Frum. David Frum broke with his party the minute they cut off his welfare check,
mm-hmm.
his Wingnut welfare check. The minute he lost his health benefits and his paycheck from the American Enterprise Institute, he suddenly discovered, oh my God, conservatives have lost their mind. And he crawled up Andrew Sullivan's ass, and Andrew Sullivan found him a job at the Daily Beast, and he began his new career as an apostate conservative who does have a pretty who's willing to talk about what's wrong with the conservative movement, but it's always at this weird remove, as if he weren't ever a part of it, as if he wasn't George Bush's speechwriter, as if he never participated. He was never in Germany. I was in Sweden. I was pursuing Edelweiss. I have no idea why these tattoos. And he has this very peculiar mental process that most of these kind of conservatives have, to pretend that what happened never happened. And he also makes it pretty clear by his actions that he'd be perfectly willing to take a job with the Romney administration. So his break with his party appears to this humble blogger to be an economic one. The person who writes his check is the person who can command his loyalties. And the people who wrote his check stopped paying him off, and it pissed him off, and he wrote a novel about it, and he wrote a bunch of angry blog posts about it. But the minute they restore him to the good graces of the GOP, he'll write his way right back into their history, and nothing will have ever happened. The other ones, the one Jonathan Chait really takes to task, are the same ones I talk about. Ross Douthat at the New York Times, and David Brooks at the New York Times, and a few others. And he points out that, look, these are people who have written long columns from time to time just excoriating the GOP at particular intervals. David Brooks wrote a really angry column when the GOP turned down Barack Obama's, because David Brooks has written just endlessly about bipartisan crap, about, as if the problem with partisanship in D.C. is a Democrat problem or equally divided between both parties. He just lies constantly. I've said before, and I'm writing a longer piece on this, that David Brooks is engaged in a large project to create a completely falsified history of the conservative movement.
It really is amazing to read his posts in a series and realize that this is a narrative. This really is like Cloud Atlas, you know? That movie where you're going in the past and you're coming into the future and you're the present and all these things are happening, and he's really just rewriting everything.
Yeah, and he's rewriting his place in everything.
Yeah.
He's rewriting.
I wasn't there.
Jerry Falwell was never there.
Yeah.
Lee Atwater never happened. Ronald Reagan never. And it's astonishing. And again,
although
he's lying.
I should say it's more like Looper. You did compare it to Looper.
Yeah, I did.
And we did see that movie. And it really is like, okay, I'm going to have my guy from the past, except it's from the future, show up, and I'm just going to eviscerate him. And he won't exist anymore. Yeah.
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 It'll just go away.
But he's not killing himself. I mean, it's sort of really.
Well, and here's a
he doesn't
a
look, realize that he's actually talking about his own writing that people can look up.
Well, and people don't, though.
I know,
people
that's the thing. That's
the only
thing.
People who look up
you
actually what
and Charlie.
Me and Charlie Pierce, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's
nobody
it.
Else pays any attention to
I'm pretending to have me on a first-name basis with Charlie Pierce for fun this weekend, all I weekend know. Long. I'm going to go, and Charlie told me the other day, yeah.
Charlie, you know, without me, Charlie, huh?
Yeah.
But David Brooks, one of the little known facts, and I won't get off on a David Brooks rant too hard on this, but it does bear
Hillary
on what Steve
loves
asked.
It when you get off on a David Brooks rant. My friend Hillary.
I'll get on a little rantlet. David Brooks did not go to college for journalism. David Brooks went to the University of Chicago for history. David Brooks is a history major. And David Brooks is engaged in a very complex and long vision project to completely rewrite the history of Republicanism and conservatism in America. Column after column, he writes about a conservative party and a Republican party that never existed. And it's why his comment section in the New York Times fills up with hundreds of people going, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
How the hell can you write this? This is complete bullshit. Yeah. So, for example, there was this column where David Brooks said clearly, look, I to partisanship all the time. Barack Obama has offered a 10-to-1 spending cut to the GOP. If they don't take this, if they fuck up the debt ceiling thing, they are not fit to govern the country.
He said you people will blame them for this. Yes.
And they will be right. Mm-hmm. It's the closest David Brooks ever uses to using the personal pronoun. He writes in a very passive voice. But he clearly said if the Republican Party doesn't take this deal, they're just unfit to govern. And they didn't take the deal. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, he found a way to forget he ever said that and went right back to saying, you know, the problem in Washington is Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
The problem in Washington is both sides do it. Both sides do it. Both sides do it. Both sides are unreasonable. Both sides are wrong. If only we had a grand bargain. If only Barack Obama were more compromisey. That's why Mitt Romney, really, I'm going to have to go with Mitt Romney, because Barack Obama has shown himself not to be a real compromiser. He doesn't seem to be really bipartisan in his heart. Dude, Stephen, that's the last moderate Republican. He's a filthy liar. And you know what he gets for being a filthy liar, Stephen? He gets promotions. He gets to be on NPR. He gets to be on PBS. He gets to be on Meet the Press. All of his little friends in the media who control that center ground keep putting him on the air to replicate and multiply his lies. And you know what you see on Twitter? Every time David Brooks writes one of these god-awful revisionist pieces of crap, David Brooks is very insightful. David Brooks finally writes a reasonable column. Thank God we have a moderate voice on the right to talk about this stuff. And if you read Jonathan Chait's column, he just says David Brooks makes this shit up.
Yeah.
And every time he gets outraged, he writes about a theoretical Republican Party that doesn't exist.
So that's the third that's the third guy who writes about David Brooks is Jonathan Chait.
And Ross Douthat is the same way. So there is this little coterie of moderate conservatives.
Well, isn't Ross Douthat kind of like a boil on David Brooks's leg, though? I mean, he's just a little punk.
But you know what he has?
A job at the New York Times?
Exactly. He has a job at the New York Times op-ed column page where he gets to, you know, unveil his deep Catholic angst and write about – and he keeps writing about – again, these people keep writing about a Republican Party and conservative movement that doesn't fucking exist. Mm-hmm. And they keep pretending that the real Republican Party, the real conservative movement they have been supporting their entire adult lives, isn't there. Wasn't what it was. Didn't happen. And again, that level of Stalinist delusion might sound moderate to David Gregory and his pals on Meet the Press. But what it is simply a different species of lying that is every bit as pernicious and destructive as the species of lying that Michelle Malkin and Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck engage in every day of their lives.
Yeah.
It's just that they dress it up. They put it in very modest language, but they're just as bad. So the problem, Stephen, is, you know, all the Republicans of conscience bailed and became liberals. So it's really hard for me to write about them, because if you're still on that bandwagon, you are by definition a bad person and you are unfit to be a citizen in my country. And that's why I have no problem condemning the David Brookses and the David Frums and the Ross Douthats with the same broad brush as Rush Limbaugh, because they're all part of the same problem.
And it would be nice. The other thing I want to add to our response to his letter, and again, thank you for the letter. I want to make sure that everyone who's listening to us, including Stephen, knows that we desperately miss having conversations with reasonable conservatives. That something has been lost for us by the fact that the Republican Party has lost its mind. Because there's something so intoxicating about having a vibrant, lively debate with someone that has facts at their disposal and interprets those facts differently than we do. And there's a case to be made for reining in certain government spending. There's a not that I always agree with that or have that I don't have that I have different ideas than a reasonable conservative, but there is a case to be made for some conservative ideas about, like, I would love to have a conversation with someone about how we reduce the abortion numbers in this country.
Yep.
It turns out that Obamacare is predicted to reduce abortion numbers by like 71%. That's a good thing.
Yeah. No. Socialism.
That's contraception. Which apparently is forcing down the throats of the Catholic Church and interfering with religious freedom. Excuse me? 98% of Catholic women use it in this country.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not reality. No, reality is it's being forced. Barack Obama's forcing it down our throats. Whose throats? As Tina Fey said today, a lot of what did she say? Something about a lot of chalky white men with $2 haircuts are defining rape.
Yeah.
You know, this is insane. This is not reality. And they're not making their own reality. They're just making shit up. And it's bad theology. It's bad politics. And it's bad for our country.
It's bad science. It's bad economics. It's bad foreign policy. And we can Stephen, I would love not to have this job.
Yeah.
I would totally love to be able to talk about science fiction on this podcast every week. or literature or poetry or economic development mm-hmm. or anything else that interests me or interests Blue Gal. Right now, we have a problem. Yeah. The Republican Party is a cancer.
Yeah.
It is running wildly out of control. And the people who are in charge of keeping that cancer in check and curing it are, in fact, feeding it yep. live blood yep. every week yep. by saying, well, cancer is really not
We don't want to have the campaign be that way. We don't want to be calling lies. We don't want to say the word lie. No.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Cancer is a form of life, isn't it? And how can you be anti-life? And that person is named Mark Halperin.
Absolutely. And he's got a job. So, and he's got a seat at the Morning Joe show on the terrible liberal network.
And you know who doesn't have a seat at those shows? Anybody who calls them on this shit.
Right.
And that's what we really need most. Because, frankly,
Micah did a good job in that video on your blog. But she's one voice. And she said, I'm the only voice here that's saying this. That's too bad. She's also the only woman on that panel. Excuse me.
And next
maybe there's a binder full of women that we can send to Joe Scarborough.
So, yeah,
That's a great place to end this. Yeah.
We both lament not having the ability to argue with conservatives.
Yeah, absolutely.
When the world is not at stake.
Yep.
And
when they are actually willing to concede fact.
Because it's fun. It's like arguing theology. It's fun. Well, the person's not a fucking nut job. It's actually fun. But when the person sits across from you and says now
black
the earth
is
white.
No, you that's don't understand.
Fact.
The
that's
sky
fact.
Is
You're
orange
hell. That's
yellow
fact.
With unicorns. Yeah.
And we would like to turn this into public policy and force you to believe what we believe.
Yep.
That's when it becomes fascism.
Well, and you're not a real American.
Yeah.
And you're hiding something with your, you know, it's not about the tax returns. It's about the college transcripts and $5 million. And the Herman Cain was the Republican front runner for 3 weeks.
All
he's
of which
very
would
funny
be
funny on The Daily Show. You know, he's a great
all of which,
entertainer, but.
And this would all be hilarious if the polls weren't 47-47.
47-47, exactly. And we weren't debating what rape is.
And if these people hadn't spent much of the last generation wrecking my country, it would be amusing. It'd be a funny story
for $2 billion a day, and now saying we're too broke to provide health care to children. That's what's going on. Look,
but it's
we
not
have
funny
to stop.
Anymore.
And every week we post a picture of an internet kitty, usually sent in by you, the listeners. But this week, our internet kitty is very close to home. In honor of Halloween, this week,
and my birthday.
And your birthday is coming up on the 30th of October. And it's hard for you to have an October 30th birthday because people tell you no sweet stuff until tomorrow because it's Halloween.
I say screw those people.
I'm going to have cake. In honor of Halloween and Driftglass's birthday, which is the day before Halloween. Happy birthday, Driftglass.
Thank you, baby.
This week's internet kitty is our own Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper. And he's an all-black kitty. But I have to apologize to Sarah Palin because he only shucks in the litter box. He never jives.
You walked right up to the line there, Blue Gal.
She's an idiot.
Yeah.
All right. You can send us your internet kitty photos. Send them to our email address at proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. If you're sending us an internet kitty picture, please put in the subject line internet kitty so we know that there's a picture of an internet kitty to put in, as we call it, the line of succession to internet kittydom. There's no wait list for kitties, just a line of succession. Please feel free to write to us. We love hearing from you, and we are having a letter show on Thanksgiving weekend where we will be reading letters for the whole show. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties just wish Calista Gingrich and the DCCC would stop calling already.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. life. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2012. Drift Glass Blue Gal Podcast.
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kiddies are going as Calista Gingrich for Halloween.
The little wigs are so cute. One of the internet kiddies is here sniffing the nip.
Uh-huh.
That's what the kids are calling it these days.
Yeah, huffing the nip.
Huffing the nip. Huffington Post the nip. I'm going to save my Photoshop.
Aha, I caught you mid-Photoshop.
No, you didn't, but I realize that that's taking up valuable resources on.
Caught you with your pixels down.
Yeah. Hey, you know my pixels all too well, baby.
Fred, I do. Yeah, and by the way, I'd like to emphasize that this is not just episode 151. This is the 151st continuous episode.
Yeah.
Of this podcast. And I know this might or might not make it on the air, but look, guys, this is just me and my wife in a house with a tin can and some string, and we managed to do this 151 times in a row every week without interruption.
Without interruption, and we did record a podcast on our wedding day.
Yeah.
So
sickness, surgery,
yeah, we've been through
tragedy,
surgery and all
you
kinds
name
of
it.
Stuff. Yeah.
We managed to pull this off every week.
Because we love doing this. Start again with
that. Was it Calista again?
No, it wasn't Calista. We beat Neil Cavuto on Stitcher Radio last week.
Suck it,
Neil Cavuto.